Vitale, and this is Living History. This show explores the rich heritage of the Brandywine Valley outside Philadelphia, focusing on the people, places, and events over more than 300 years, which have played an important part in our American heritage. Each show highlights a local town, event, or personality who's had a notable influence on our culture. Before we get started, I want to mention that our call-in line is 610-701-9243. That's 610-701-9243. This day in history. In 1803, Chief Justice John Marshall establishes a precedent in ruling that the Supreme Court has the authority to review actions by other branches of government, its agencies, and representatives. In the case Marbury v. Madison, the court decided that they had the ultimate authority to review and make binding decisions determining actions allowed under the Constitution, a critical turning point in American judicial history. In 1836, Colonel William Travis sends a desperate message for assistance from a mission called the Alamo in the disputed region of Texas, which had declared its independence from Mexico. Troops under General Santa Anna laid siege to the mission and 10 days later stormed the outpost, killing Travis, Jim Bowie, Davy Crockett, and dozens of others. American forces later defeated Santa Anna, reclaiming the victory. In 1991, the ground offensive in the major international military effort called Desert Storm begins after a devastating air campaign which pounded Saddam Hussein's entrenched troops that had taken over the country of Kuwait. U.S. President George H.W. Bush put together a successful coalition to undo the aggression. The Iraqi troops were decimated amidst an overwhelming barrage, which successfully liberated Kuwait, removing Hussein's forces in one of the best planned and superbly executed military operations in U.S. history. People around the nation drive by historic sites every day. Many of them have been sitting vacant for years, sometimes decades, the victims of neglect and cash-strapped local communities which have limited resources and are often unable to preserve these important parts of our American heritage. The village of Sugartown near Malvern, Pennsylvania, is one of the success stories in historic preservation. With a history going back well over 200 years, the village has a rustic general store, a bookbindery, a carriage museum, and several other important structures from yesteryear. Faith McCarrick and Heather Reifer are two individuals dedicated to preserving these vestiges of our history, and they have put their time and effort into supporting and showcasing this lovely historic village. Today we have Faith with us to discuss the many locations there which people can visit and explore. Faith, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Dean.
Yes. How long have you been involved with Historic Sugartown?
I started working here in March of 2014, so I'm coming up on 2 years now.
Okay.
I'm in my third.
Yeah, and you know, for our listeners outside of the Philadelphia area, where exactly is Sugartown?
So Sugartown is located on Sugartown Road in Willistown Township. It is in Malvern, so people recognize that, and we're in Chester County.
So you're kind of northeasternmost Chester County.
Yeah.
Right on the edge.
Yeah, and we're actually pretty close to Delaware County as well, so we have some people who often come up from Delaware County to visit us.
Yeah, I visited the village. It's actually just a lovely little rustic historic village. Tell us just a bit about its history, just a kind of a brief synopsis.
Sure. So the village itself was built up around the 1800s. It started because people traveled along Sugartown Road and often needed a place to stop, and so they kind of forced their way in some ways. We have some great stories from the early 1800s and late 1700s where people would just knock on people's doors who were living there and say, hey, can I stop in for a rest or a bite to eat? So anyway, we kind of started up based on an inn that was around the village, and then a blacksmith shop started, obviously, around travel. When you're traveling along the road, you're going to need a blacksmith shop. And then around 1800, things started to really move in Sugartown. Our general store was built, and a school was was built in the late 1700s, so we were kind of bustling around that time.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned the inn. Was that also like a tavern or just a place for people to stay?
It was a tavern initially, and it kind of went back and forth throughout its history. So from 1790, it was a tavern, and then as it went on, I believe they prohibited alcohol sales at some point, and it became just an inn where they would sell food and people could stay. But then I think they brought the alcohol back. I mean, you can't keep them away.
Yeah, now a lot of people listening may not realize that historic Sugartown was there right around the time when Philadelphia was actually the capital of the colonies.
Yes. So it was a very important town at that point, and important along the route to get to Philadelphia. So a lot of people were traveling there, and it was sort of directly in the way. So we mm-hmm. got a lot of those travelers.
Mm-hmm. Now, how many actual structures that are preserved there, the actual historic structures, are there existing that people can actually visit?
Well, it's a little broken up. We have 9 buildings that we steward over 9.2 acres, but a lot of them are connected. So you can technically visit on our guided tours. You can technically visit 5 of our 9 buildings. They range. Two of them are, well, one of them is a historic house. One of them is a 19th century barn. Mm-hmm. There's our general store, which you mentioned. And then in the building of the general store, there's also a schoolroom exhibit on the 3rd floor of that same building. Mm-hmm. And then they can visit our 19th century bookbindery, which is mm-hmm. the building itself was built, is a modern building, but it houses 19th century tools. Mm-hmm. And then we also have another modern building, our carriage museum, which houses around, I think, 17 or 18 carriages and sleighs dating from the 1700s to the early 1900s.
Mm-hmm. What is the actual oldest structure there preserved in Sugartown? Are you aware which one's the oldest?
Well, it kind of ranges. In the buildings that we steward, our oldest building would probably be our general store structure that was built between 1800 and 1805. Mm-hmm. Along with around 1805, there was a saddlery shop and residence built, which are buildings connected to our general store. Mm-hmm. And the saddlery shop is where people would come and get their saddles and leather things fixed. Mm-hmm. And then also our William Garrett House, which is a Quaker residence, was built in 1805. Okay. If you're talking about the village in general, though, the school, which we don't steward and don't own, it's privately owned now, was established in the 1780s, okay. And so was the blacksmith shop, which, again, is a privately owned structure.
Okay, so there are some nearby structures which are actually even somewhat older.
Yes. And they all still make up the village of Sugartown, and it's something we point out on our tours, and you can obviously see the visuals of the outside, but we don't own them, so we don't go in them.
Mm-hmm. Now, so people, if they stop in and visit, they can kind of walk around the entire village, is that correct?
Yes. We are on both sides of the road, and we around Sugartown Road, and the outside is open to just walk around. There's a nice lawn behind our Garrett House, which is beautiful to walk around. And then you can even get right up close to the buildings, even if we're not open for tours, and see in some of the windows and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You can kind of stroll as you would have in the 19th century. Although I will say, nowadays with cars on Sugartown Road instead of carriages, it gets a little hairy around rush hour.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I understand. I visited there once or twice, and it's really just a lovely rustic village. And I'm thinking about Chester County in general. There are numerous sites which could use restoration and preservation. Mm-hmm. How did the locals there in that area get involved in preserving historic Sugartown?
Well, a lot of the credit has to be given to our founders. A gentleman named John Nagy lived across from the general store in what was the schoolhouse, which, again, is privately owned today. Mm-hmm. But he sort of saw the buildings across from his house falling into disrepair, and he rallied, local neighbors and troops and got funders and got people who were interested in it. And he put historic Sugartown together in 1983 to really save the whole area and purchase the buildings as they were to restore them.
Mm-hmm.
They he did such great work and was very meticulous about his restoration and getting the right people involved. So he got, you know, people who really loved history on the board, and he got, you know, a number of people who were just interested in saving what we have here today.
Mm-hmm. I do know John. We've had him on the show, and he's part of the American Revolutionary Roundtable of Philadelphia, so he's quite active. And as you probably know, he's a well-known author. He's written a lot on the Revolutionary period. Real quickly, before we take a mid-show break, I have actually visited the Carriage Museum there, which is wonderful. It showcases several historic vehicles, from a Conestoga wagon to several 19th century coaches. Tell us just a little bit about the history of some of those vehicles.
Sure. Well, one of my favorite vehicles in there is our it's our hearse that was built in the 1870s, I believe, in Guthriesville, Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. For a local the company that...
like a funeral service?
A funeral home, I apologize. Yeah. Yes, yeah. A funeral home, yes. And it is beautifully, beautifully maintained as it was in that time period. We haven't done any sort of modern work on it, so it looks exactly as it would, and it actually even has a coffin in it still.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Well,
I checked in the coffin. There's nothing in there, although there is a piece of paper, and I haven't been able to get it.
I have seen that, and, you know, before we take our break, I just want to mention quickly, you have a real-life, so to speak, a Conestoga wagon, an actual example of a Conestoga wagon, which is fascinating, and not many people have seen those things. We are just about to take a short break, but we will be back with Faith McCarrick of Historic Sugartown, so please stay with us.
Radio PA's Ask the Governor program brings you access to Pennsylvania's governor like you've never had before. You can send your questions and comments to Governor Tom Wolf now by going to PAMatters.com and clicking the Ask the Governor link at the top of the page. You could be part of our next edition of Ask the Governor.
School funding, investment in schools is really important to me. My goal is to try to provide for a fairer tax system for everybody. I said, send me a full year budget, a real budget, and I'll let it pass. We need to get to work to get this budget done.
You can also listen to Ask the Governor and watch exclusive video clips from the show on PAMatters.com.
This is Governor Tom Wolf. We'll talk about the issues that affect you on Ask the Governor. You can submit your question or comment today by visiting PAMatters.com.
Ask the Governor is a production of Radio PA and PAMatters.com in association with TFM Advertising.
Are you tired of looking up at that old, streaky, stained, tired, ugly roof? Tired of that ugly roof taking away from your home's curb appeal? G.P. Martini Roofing wants to solve your curb appeal woes with a new roof built with Atlas Pristine Shingles featuring Scotch Guard Protector from 3M. The only shingle with a lifetime limited warranty against algae streaks and stains. G.P. Martini's crews are highly trained professional installers of asphalt shingle roofs, and now with the power of Atlas Shingles and Scotch Guard Protector from 3M, GP Martini will install a roof that will provide the lasting color you choose for as long as you're in your home. Let GP Martini Roofing have a look at that nagging leak, or just call to consult about upgrading the look for your prized investment. Call them today, 610-873-1696. Whether your need is residential or commercial, GP Martini Roofing has the expertise in-house to solve your problem, or to simply make your home or office look its best. 610-873-1696. That's the number to call. 610-873-1696. And one of those GP Martini trucks will be on its way to you.
WCHE 1520 AM, bringing you all things Chester County from our palatial studios on West Gay Street in Uptown Westchester. The talk of Chester County. If you don't believe it, just ask your neighbor. They listen.
I'm Gene Pasale, and this is Living History. We're talking with Faith McCarrick from Historic Sugartown, a rustic late 18th century village near Malvern, Pennsylvania. Faith, what's your favorite part of Historic Sugartown?
Well, I have many favorite parts, but I do want to just mention something that I didn't get to mention before. Our John Nagy is actually a different John Nagy than the author, who's also a wonderful gentleman in history. But our John Nagy was just a local gentleman around here who was just in love with this little town of Sugartown, and he's not actually related to the author at all.
Oh, okay, well, thank you for the clarification.
Yeah. No problem.
Yeah. So what's your favorite part?
It changes often, but I will say being in our general store is actually a really fun place to be because you sort of feel completely transported back in time because there's really nothing around you that screams of modernity. So it all of a sudden you're just in the 1880s. Mm. You feel like you could pick something up and buy your eggs and buy your apples and out. But we also, my second favorite right now is our 19th century bathroom, which sounds a little odd. I don't like to spend a lot of time in the bathroom myself, but we still have the toilet and the tub and the sink all from the late 1900s. Oh, so it looks exactly as if you're walking into a Victorian bathroom. The tub has a wooden surround with a metal bin inside it. It's just so beautifully 19th century. It's just, again, it's one of those ones that just takes you back in time.
Mm-hmm. That sounds interesting. Late 1800s bathroom could be interesting. Now, in terms of the general store, do they actually sell like dry goods and things like that, or is it more of a display?
We have a display of all the dry goods and things like that, but we don't sell anything particular food related, except for we do have some candy sticks on sale. Which
oh, okay. Now, do you personally give tours there at Sugartown?
I do. I do when we have special events. We have a fabulous group of tour guides who do our weekend tours. We're open from May to December on Saturday and Sunday to give regular guided tours throughout the day. And they are a fabulous group of people who love history and are very interested in it and very knowledgeable. Mm-hmm. But I do get to give tours when we have groups who come or at our special events. Like this weekend, we have a tea coming up. We're calling it Hannah's Leap Day Tea in honor of Leap Day coming up and in honor of Hannah Worrell, one of the daughters of the longest-running proprietor of the general store.
Oh, interesting.
I will get to give tours of the general store on Saturday, so that'll be fun.
In terms of tours, a lot of people these days, especially people under 30, like to have like an audio-visual tour or something they can listen to on headphones. Have you put together anything like that?
Not yet. I think that's one of the things that we'd love to look to in the future, especially since if we have people visit during the week and we don't have guides, it'd be fun for them to be able to call in on their phone and get more information. But we haven't set that up right now.
Mm-hmm.
And something we're looking forward to. I do have sometimes my guides do bring visuals with them of the structures you can't see, and we do have an iPad, which I've been toying with the idea of putting more images on there for them to walk around with,
iPad
to get it more involved, even in the buildings you can't see into.
That can add to the accessibility and certainly the interest level. What in terms of your collection now, most of the collection is actually buildings, but what, in terms of things that you physically have there aside from structures, what do you consider the most interesting artifact in your collection there?
Just a note on our collections. A lot of our collections are actually owned by our partner, Chester County Historical Society. We partnered with them specifically on the Carriage Museum, so many of those carriages are theirs in ownership, but we steward them and we display them. And then in our general store, they've also been very generous in working with us to put on a really wonderful display of 19th century pieces from their collection as well.
Oh, interesting.
So we do want to make sure that they know we love it. Appreciate all the stuff that they have provided us with.
Well, I fully support the Chester County Historical Society. I'm a member. And,
wonderful. I've
been over there many times, and David Reinfeld's a wonderful gentleman over there who's now acting director. In terms of your location, how many people are volunteers there, and do you have any full-time staff?
We have two full-time staff. Myself, I'm the Director of Programs and Outreach, and our Executive Director, Heather Reifer. And then we have one part-time staff who's our Facilities Manager, Rob Ewing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have seven seasonal guides who work with us from May to December doing our regular guided tour hours and then group tours and things like that throughout the other times.
Mm-hmm.
And we have about 20 active volunteers, which is really good to have. And they help with a variety of things, with tours, with school tours, with special events. And also I'm trying to get more of our volunteers involved with sort of things that go on day to day. So just maintaining the site. We do decorating for the holidays. They help with that. And just a plug, if anyone's interested in volunteering, we're having a volunteer interest night coming up on March 21st. It's a Monday evening at 7. We'll be talking more about the various volunteer things you can do here at Sugartown. We'll be giving a small tour of the general store and the Carriage Museum. And sort of it'll just be a fun night where you can meet the staff and other volunteers.
Oh, that's excellent. I'm glad you mentioned volunteer night. People who have an interest in history, they can actually get their feet wet, so to speak, and go over there and walk around and get involved in the activities. You did mention earlier your book bindery, and you have bindery workshops coming up in March, and you mentioned also privately throughout the year. Just tell us a little bit about that. What do they do when they go to a bindery workshop?
Oh, our bindery workshops are such a wonderful thing that we've just started doing. We are partnering with a gentleman named Ramon Townsend. He was he worked out in Colonial Williamsburg and was trained in their bookbindery in 18th and 19th century style of bookbinding and other crafts related to that. So he knows about paper marbling and also making paper. And what he's doing during these workshops is he is inviting people into our bookbindery to teach them the 18th and 19th century style of actually binding a book together. They're pretty intensive workshops. They're about 6 hours long, but you go through the entire process and you get to create a book out of materials that he provides, and then you get to take it home with you.
Oh my gosh, that's interesting. Now, most people have never physically put together a book.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you actually have the physical machines there which bind books and put them together so people can physically make their own book, is that right?
Yes. We have things called sewing frames, which are sort of the major part of how to put together the papers within the interior of the book. You actually have to hand sew them together. Mm-hmm. And then we have book presses, which help with pressing the book together with its cover, and you get to also adhere a beautiful marbled cover or a leather spine on your book as well. And we have the tools and materials to do that.
Interesting. Now, I obviously in recent decades, many books have been bound with, I guess, a glue.
Yeah.
Is that right? And I'm not sure how different that is versus your process. I'm guessing your process is a lot more time intensive.
It is a lot more time intensive. Now, with the modern books, basically they're just pressing them together and then gluing the spine onto the backs of the pieces of paper.
Mm-hmm.
Now, our process, and most people don't sew at all anymore, really, in modern production of books. Our process with the sewing of each of the packs of paper together, they're called signatures. So when you take them 8.5 by 11, you fold it in half, and you have sort of a section of papers that's called a signature.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we line them up on this sewing frame about 5 or 6 signatures. So you have a book with 30 to, I'm guessing here, ballparking around 50 to 60 pages.
Mm-hmm.
And you literally take a needle on the sewing frame and sew this this cord onto the paper, so that it is connected with stitching instead of glue. And then the outside is, we do use paste to glue the sewed papers onto a cardboard
like a backing,
front and back,
what have you.
Yes,
yeah.
And then leather to bind the spine up to really hold that book together.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's really, really fun. And then beyond our book binder, he's in March, his workshop is going to be on paper marbling, which goes through the 19th century process of how to make the beautiful marbled paper.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure your readers have seen it. When you open up an old book and you see that front cover, it's mm-hmm. often got this beautiful swirled colors on mm-hmm. on the first first piece of paper.
Sure.
Connected
mm-hmm.
to the cover. That's usually marbled paper, and
I
he goes through the whole process of doing it, and the participants, again, it's 5 hours, and you get to learn exactly how to do it and then create, I think, as many sheets as you want.
Oh, excellent. That is great. I know you have a Facebook page, and how important is social media marketing to bring people to your site, to your location there?
I think It's very important to us in terms of getting the word out there that we're there. I don't know how many people, you know, it often translates from, you know, a like on a Facebook page to getting you in the door, but it really helps people know what we're doing and keep them informed. We have a lot of fun on our Facebook page sharing fun history facts as well as what's going on day to day. So you can go on there and see some fun, we have some fun video. We had a Victorian dance last year and we videoed people dancing mm-hmm. In beautiful Victorian dresses and mm-hmm. learning how to dance and that's up there. It's just sort of what we do day to day is up there. It really helps us engage with everybody. Even if you're, you know, not able to come to an event, you can engage with us on Facebook. But of course we want you to come.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So for our listeners, if you go on Facebook, I think if you put in Historic Sugartown, it'll take you right to your
page. That Historic Sugartown should bring you right to our Facebook page, and we encourage everybody to check it out and like it. We also have a Twitter page, which we use greatly to get out the word about events. So if you want to keep up on that, follow us on Twitter. And then we're also on TripAdvisor now.
Excellent.
If you come and you really enjoy your trip, you can give us a review on TripAdvisor and let other people know how amazing it was.
Wonderful. Now, we're almost done on time, but just in our last minute or two, wanted to ask about fundraising and sponsors. I'm sure it's somewhat expensive to maintain the buildings there in Sugartown. Do you have any fundraising events or any major sponsors? If just in our last minute, let's discuss that.
Yeah, we rely on public support and individual donations. We also get income at our special events and programs. So, I mean, if you come to a special event or a program, you're really supporting all the work we do at Sugartown. We also have commercial real estate within some of our buildings where we rent out office space. So we get income from that. But one event fundraiser that we're in our third year of doing now is Shugart Sunday in September. That's going to be on the 11th. It's a great fun time where you get barbecue and you listen to bluegrass music, but all the proceeds from that go to support just maintaining Sugartown and maintaining the buildings and everything that we do here.
Oh, excellent. That is excellent. Now, just for our listeners, if you want to go to their website, it is historicsugartown.org. And it's really a wonderful place to visit. So I've been there personally. I will go back. Thanks so much for being with us today. Be sure to tune in next Wednesday, March 2nd at 1 p.m. Eastern, when we will be speaking with Ryan Conroy, president of the Phoenixville Historical Society. Thank you all for joining us today for Living History.